Well, I'm Sheldon Brown, and I'm doing everything today, production and hosting, announcing, broadcasting, the whole works, because Declan is just running a little bit late, so my technician on Mental Health Radio, Tater From Us, is just coming from Pukekohe, and he's just running a couple of minutes late. But it seems as though I have got some music in the background there, so I've got rid of that, and it's all go here. And it's Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, brought to you from by Framework Trust. And of course, Framework, we announced the fact that Framework and Connect Supporting Recovery are going to merge. I think it's going to be activated around about July. But the new CEO, Daryl Bishop, who is the CEO of Connect Supporting Recovery, which is based on the North Shore, he's going to take up his position early next month. I haven't got the detail in front of me, but that's the big news from Framework, the merger between Framework and Connect Reporting Recovery. Now, I've got to say that I'm quite proud of myself today. I spent most of Auckland's birthday weekend, the 3 days, on my own, and I got through it with flying colours. And I'd have to say that wouldn't have happened several years ago. I would have felt lonely, undermined, with a woe-is-me attitude, asking what is wrong with me, rather than today I understand my strengths and I'm capitalising on them. I accept that I had the benefit of going to my batch on Waiheke. However, I know that hard work and persistence, riding out my rough times and understanding the importance of independence and resilience, has helped me retain that asset. And today I've had the chance to revisit my DIY skills. When I say today, I mean in the last little while on Waiheke. The place was rented for 12 years, and I took it over around about November, and in the last 2 months I've been really revisiting those DIY skills. I've dragged out my skill saw, my drop saw, my sander, and the chainsaw that I bought, and the paintbrushes as well, and I've got stuck in. And having a project on a long weekend which focused my brain away from negative thoughts about aloneness was just wonderful. I guess it's a bit like the value of creativity and art and maybe bone carving. You know, some of the things I did at Waiheke as I laid some pavers in a tight and tricky location. I spread the sand underneath, and when I got the pavers down, I spread it around the cracks between the pavers and fixed up a small bit of decking just alongside. It was satisfying and great for a good night's sleep too. I cut down some dead pungas, I mowed the lawn, I helped the neighbour cut a hedge and spent time sitting admiring my handiwork, taking a pause and saying thanks to the fact that I was able to reactivate those DIY skills I hadn't accessed for almost 20 years. Yes, I drank a little too much alcohol in the evenings, but I added some great music to my enjoyment. Eric Clapton, JJ Cale, Tina Turner and Mick and the Stones. It lifted my spirits even further. I've revelled in being alone and making tea for myself in the morning early and enjoying seeing the sun come up as going back to sleep and hearing the birds, the tuis, the fantails and wax eyes playing together, lightly touching their environment as they flipped from punga frond to punga frond. Being grateful, you know, I was being grateful that on Waiheke nature is more in balance and birds can thrive. Just being grateful, it got me through what could have been a lonely and anxious long weekend if I hadn't adopted a different attitude to previous years. Now, last week on Mental Health Radio, we exposed the use of illegal video surveillance in many acute DHB psychiatric units. After this broadcast, I posted on several mental health Facebook pages a message, and I hope Declan is just coming in to take over. But this message said, and I logged it on the BINS website, the Friends of Waiatarau, the Mental Health Complaints website, and also the Happiness Experiment website. And this is what I said. In researching information for Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, earlier in the week, that was last week, on patient assaults on staff and mental health units, I stumbled on a paper published by news agency The Spinoff. It highlights the common use of illegal video surveillance of mental health patients by a majority of DHBs throughout the country in mental health units. This article, which was by Karen Black, raises many questions in my mind. How widely is this dangerous and illegal surveillance known in psychiatry? What if any consent is sought from patients? How regularly is this surveillance viewed by staff, and who has the approval to view it? Where does the surveillance occur in hospitals? What do nurses and other staff know about it, and how do they feel about being under the CCTV microscope? The revelations from the review of illegal surveillance, which was written by Karen Black, a former mental health advocate with Kahui Tukaha, is more than disturbing, and I'm surprised it's released some time ago. That article's released some time ago. Hasn't caused a storm among people with lived experience and among the consumer movement as well. So no wonder this frustration is boiling over in mental health units, and I regard this surveillance as an example of psychiatric oppression in Aotearoa. Now, that was my comment, comments that I made on Facebook soon after our broadcast last Tuesday. Now, you know, there's been some considerable comment on Facebook, and I've got Declan here. I'm not sure whether he's going to take over the production seat or not.
I can run over to your side.
Okay, I might run over to my side and collect my papers. What say we, can we take a music break? I'll just grab one of these comments here. One of the people who responded to my comments about this illegal surveillance said, "This is something I started looking into. Apparently, if there are signs on the wall to say there are cameras operating, and if they have clearly mentioned there are cameras operating in their information packs, then it isn't illegal to have this surveillance." This is according to Louise Windleborn on the Facebook page BINZ, B-I-N-Z. "Personally, I would have them up if they are operating and there aren't clear signs telling you they are there. I do know of inpatient services that don't have cameras operating in the units. Maybe people who have been involved in working in different inpatient units who are on Facebook can give some indication of which ones do or don't." I think it's we're going to bring in some music here, Declan. Okay, right. Well, you've got a fair bit of volume there, so let's take a music break on Mental Health Radio. Take It From Us.
lady's eyes. Just for fun, he says, get a job. That's just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. But don't you believe them? Said, hey, little boy, you can't go where the others go. You don't look like they do. Said, hey, old man, how can you stand to think that way? Did you really think about it before you made the rules? He said, just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. Oh, but don't you believe them.
Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And, yeah, apologies for the fairly spontaneous sort of start to our Mental Health Radio Take It From Us broadcast today. Declan is back and welcome.
I'm back. Thank you. I'm back in the kennel again.
You're back in the kennel.
With my lead and a collar on.
Yeah, exactly. So he's been out without his collar all the way to Pukekohe and had a little difficulty getting back on time. But I was just reading some response to the Facebook posting that I made last week about Thursday in terms of the research paper which has exposed that there is illegal video surveillance in many of our acute psychiatric units. And as a result of this posting, I've had quite a bit of comment on different mental health Facebook pages, and I was reading listeners some comment from Louise Windleborn, who has given an assurance that some units do have notices up saying that there is monitoring and that there are also notices in their information packs. But she does finish her comments by saying, I think it's important people know, referring to the surveillance, and if they stayed in one and they didn't know, then I would be going back to that DHB and get some recourse about it, or at least make some inquiry. We've had a range of comments. Corinda Taylor says, I have slightly different take on this. The way the media has portrayed patient assaults should be questioned. Personally, I think a lot of these so-called assaults, if on video, would probably show what happened in the lead-up to it. I have seen and I have heard from others how patients are spoken down to. Disdain, for want of a better word, is often how people are treated. No wonder they lose their rags sometimes because of frustration. As for the illegal video surveillance, I don't like it illegal, but if legal, it would certainly prevent staff from manhandling people who are distressed. Perhaps there should be clear signs to indicate that video surveillance is being carried out. Perhaps if we have more video surveillance, there would be less constraint and seclusion, not to mention more de-escalation. Just a thought, but I could be wrong. We've also got a comment here from Lynn, who says, going into a mental health unit is depressing, and when there I watch what goes on, and it's like a prison. I wouldn't want anyone going into one of these places. Seclusion still being used made me sick going in to see my son. And when one person wants cigarettes and a piece of toast from the kitchen, it's appalling. Like in school, having to put one hand up to go to the toilet. Cameras can be used for good or more for bad. No wonder some of the patients get aggro. Cameras would probably be used more to back up staff and not patients. And also from another Facebook user and responder, we don't have video surveillance in medical hospitals on the wards to monitor incidences or patients' behaviour or that of staff, as we don't in theatre or consultation rooms. There are very sound reasons for this that are more than obvious, the main one being privacy rights from both the perspective of the professional and the patients. The powers that be know of the illegal monitoring simply because monies are required to set up the illegal system in the first place. Someone signs that off, as well as someone had to request it, and others have had to install it. Karen Black, who is the guest writer who we hope to interview next week about this issue, is an intelligent, honest young woman, and I certainly would stand by her and any of her findings. Definitely appreciate, she says, definitely appreciate me sourcing this information and sharing it on Take It From Us. So now what, people? I know what I will be doing, asking the question why, how and where. So there's another little comment here saying, in fact, that one person with lived experience, she says, I wanted to have the video cameras installed because I was concerned about abusive staff in a particular unit. So quite a range of comment. Another Facebook user, Jenny, says, some nurses egg you on, then when you lose it, it's your fault. So some fairly disparaging sort of comments generally about our psychiatric units. I would like to go to a summary of the findings of the government's inquiry into mental health and just read you a quote here, which says, the mental health and addiction system is woefully underfunded, crisis-led, and seems to chew up and spit out not only the patients but the providers. just not enough resources. Our mental health teams are stretched to their limits, and it is having a major impact on patients, their families, their employers. It can't go on like this. There needs to be more funding for support services. So that's very much along the lines of some of these comments about illegal video surveillance. Well, let's take another music break. We're on CDs today, Declan.
Yeah, my little Spotify tablet thing. I need to do a factory reset and all that sort of stuff. So I'm taking you back into some of the 80s and the 90s. By the way, for those of you that wanted to know, that last track was from Bruce Hornsby and the Range, and it was called The Way It Is. And it goes back into the 60s, apparently, with the civil rights movement and that sort of thing. Now I've got one for you. Well, this is one of the boy bands way, 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 way back, I think. Backstreet Boys and singing I Want It That Way. And you're with Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio on 104.6 Planet FM, broadcasting here every Tuesday from 12:30 till 1:30.
Yeah. You are my fire, the one desire, believe when I say I want it that way. But we are two worlds apart, can't reach to your heart when you say
from us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and the Mental Health Foundation is made a significant announcement about Mental Health Awareness Week in 2019. They're changing the date. It's the first time that I'm aware of that Mental Health Awareness Week won't be in October. They're thrilled to kick off the year of 2019 with this exciting news that Mental Health Awareness Week will take place between the 23rd and the 29th of September this year. And they say that traditionally we've held Mental Health Awareness Week over the school holidays, but we've had lots of feedback that schools want to be part of it and our young people want to celebrate Mental Health Awareness Week with everybody else in the mental health community. So that new date for 2019 is 23 to 29 September. Now, I mentioned the government inquiry into mental health and addictions, and I read the summary, which is quite enlightening. It has some great insights into what life is like for people with lived experience of addictions and mental health, and, of course, some of their carers. I think we should recap about the inquiry because it received 5,363 written, phone or video submissions, and over 2,000 people attended more than 400 stakeholder and public meetings throughout New Zealand. Meetings were also treated as submissions, so when participants spoke at a meeting, inquiry staff summarised what was said into meeting HUI or phono notes. The inquiry also received 16 petitions, and it's quite staggering to me that those petitions covered off 339,217 signatures in those 16 petitions. Signatories sought improved funding, better access to services, free counselling, legal representation and accountability for families and whānau and individuals engaged in the mental health system. So what this summary gives us is a little bit of an insight into what life is like for people with lived experience. And it says here that clearly more addiction services and support are needed. At the broader level, there was a strong call to truly shift addictions from a justice or criminal response to a health-focused response. And if I'm not incorrect, I think that's an emphasis that the government is wanting to take some of this addictions work out of the justice and criminal system and into a much more health-focused response. At the service level, the clear message from people submitting to the inquiry was that addiction services and support are lacking. Some submitters positively viewed addiction treatment options and access to services. For example, detox and rehabilitation services were where they were available, peer support, some alcohol and other drug treatment in prison and the community, and the positive role of alcohol and other drug treatment courts. But many raised concerns that demand for responsive detox and rehabilitation far outstrips availability, with limited resourcing putting strain on existing services, workforce, wait lists and options, even for those who are wishing to rehabilitate. It says the wait list for services for those wanting to rehabilitate may be months and months. One young man was recommended to keep drinking until there was a space available. He looked into going into rehab twice, however, was told there were no spaces available throughout the whole country. He has not followed up again with the idea of rehab and has continued to drink. Alcohol addiction emerged as a key concern for many people submitting to the inquiry due to alcohol's cultural acceptability, ease of access, and implications in terms of addiction, violence, and suicide. Many submitters called for a tighter legislation around alcohol availability and advertising of alcohol. Many individuals, families and whānau shared their experience of suicide in the summary to the inquiry on mental health and addiction. Very few shared positive stories of care and support. As someone who went through three suicidal incidents, I can say that crisis incidents work well for those facing suicidal ideation. That's the whole point, that if you are really in crisis and suicidal, you may get, there's more chance, in fact, that you will get treatment. The person says the support, phone lines and teams are there and easy to access. However, it is obvious they are overloaded. Many more talked about themselves or their loved ones being turned away because there was not enough support available to meet demand. They believed that the thresholds for receiving help were too high and meant only those in crisis and immediate danger of harming or killing themselves received help. And many times this was not enough to access more than just cursory services. Many times submitters noted that even people with this high level of acute need received little help. Many submitters noted that even if you had attempted suicide, you were sent home that night with no or little follow-up. There was a high need for support before people reached crisis. This situation was seen as being mainly due to a lack of funding, staff, integrated services, training and resources. One family member involved with the mental health services for many years felt that he fell through the cracks in each part of the system, and this resulted in his death by suicide. There is no set referral system in place. Health professionals referred him to a DHB mental health services. On meeting with the psychiatrist from that DHB mental health service, the patient was then referred back to his GP. Service users and their families, friends, family and whānau from treatment discussions sometimes contributing to deaths that might have been prevented. Many times, this contributor says, the Privacy Act was seen to be misunderstood or misapplied by staff and family and whānau were left uninformed. One person lived in a particular town and was taken to emergency psych services by a friend of his. This person says, if I had known that I would have got, if I had known that, I would have gone and got him or advocated for him or looked after him and maybe he wouldn't have killed himself. So that's a reference to the privacy the Privacy Act, which is seen to be misunderstood or misapplied by staff. This person says that it was very clear that his friend was in danger to himself. Then further comment, the devastating impact on families and whānau who have lost someone by suicide pointed to the need to improve post-intervention support, including looking at ways to provide more culturally appropriate support more quickly. Submitters recommended suicide prevention responses that included addressing the underlying causes of pain and trauma. In addition, many submitters recommended focusing on reducing alcohol availability and our alcohol culture. Well, let's take another music break, Declan. I'm rather monopolising the show today, but we don't have a guest. We're hoping to talk to Karen Black, who was the guest writer and investigator of this issue about illegal video surveillance in acute units. We hope Karen will be given approval to talk to Take It From Us next Tuesday. So that'll be a bit of a break from Sheldon Brown ranting on about some of these major issues that he's got his a tease and a tangle over.
I was just thinking, if they have one of those mental health reviews and both of us got on the board, could you imagine there'd be like a cat fight within caucus, wouldn't it, really?
Or like you and I fighting?
No. I was just thinking that if they were to do a reform thing, you know, like bulldoze everything flat as far as the processes and platforms they use
some people
and
restart. Recommend a restart.
Yeah, I mean, somebody must be doing it overseas in a different manner. I don't know. This next song, anyway, I've got Nick Kershaw. It's quite an interesting little puppy. And I'm going to start it off ahead of time, hopefully, all going well. That's probably not going to... No, hang on. Helps if I push the right unit. You could see I'm not very all that au fait with my systems at the moment because I'm going back to the CDs. No, this is Nick Kershaw, and he's doing a song called The Riddle. Apparently, when he did it, it didn't really have any meaning. It was quite odd. Put it all together and just thought, oh, well, I've got some words, need to get an album out, let's fire it together. So apparently, he says, it's got absolutely no meaning at all. See what you can make of it. You will take it from us, Mental Health Radio, and here is The Riddle. Just going to say, if you can make sense of those lyrics, because the only thing I got was near a tree by a river, there's a hole in the ground.
Yeah,
I just wanted to crawl in it. But I do love that song. I thought you might appreciate it too.
And a pretty popular one as well, I'd say.
Yeah, well, I try and get the ones off that you know. That's going back to actually the early 90s, believe it or not.
Yeah. So that was Nick Kershaw.
Nick Kershaw with a song called The Riddle.
Good one.
Really was, yeah.
I'm host Sheldon Brown, and I'm reading a few insights from the summary of the government's inquiry into mental health and addictions. And I think it does certainly paint a picture of what life is like, particularly for those people in New Zealand with lived experience of addiction or mental health. It talks about community, in fact, a society based on community, and this is something that I can see slipping away rather quickly, I think, with, well, the big city environment of Auckland, the sort of focus on cell phones, the fact that we don't seem to make ourselves available for connection. But it says here, many submissions, service users, whānau, NGOs and primary healthcare and advocacy groups challenged the decline in community services and opportunities to participate in community life and called for reinvestment in local solutions to local challenges. This was not only in terms of mental health and addiction, but the innate human need for belonging, identity and purpose. As one submitter with lived experience said, modern culture means that we often don't even know our neighbours. One submission represented two organisations whose members have lived experience is an example of a submission that called for a shift in society from big psychiatry to big community. And, of course, that was Mary O'Hagan's drive for a greater well-being, to get away from big psychiatry to big community. The summary into the government inquiry also looks at the need to create hope, creating hope on matters as widely relevant as acting upon climate change before it's too late, and on matters as personally relevant as whether there is anything in this world worth getting out of bed for today. And this person questions those things that could be worth getting out of bed for today. A meal, some exercise, some company, something that might bring a smile, something creative, some work, some education, something personally relevant. There's a desire, clearly, among people submitting to the inquiry for a more fair society where inequalities are reduced and people can afford to live in a warm, dry house, afford to eat healthy food and live as part of a wider, healthier environment. A society should be judged on how we treat our most vulnerable, and currently in New Zealand, we would get an F. We ask the government to invest in children's well-being from the start of life and ensure they are protected from deprivation by having adequate family income, good quality affordable housing, the ability to access health services and educational opportunities, and increased social engagement. This systemic level of change will require cross-party accord that spans the political cycle and ensures that the well-being of New Zealanders is always the political priority. Increased well-being from the start of life and connection to a thriving community will inevitably improve mental well-being. Some submitters spoke of the value of mindfulness as an approach, starting in early childhood and being taught through the education system. There was strong support for some form of evidence-based mindfulness to be included in the school curriculum, in workplaces, in healthcare, and in early childhood and parenting programs, and its value to health, well-being, emotional literacy, and regulation recognised. This approach was seen as both therapeutic and preventative. There are also insights from some submitters about living on the benefit and being unable to meet basic needs. One was quoted as saying, "I am not getting enough to survive on the benefit." It was the invalid's benefit. "It all goes on paying rent and bills. So I haven't enough money for food. I trade things." We need to be honest. There is massive poverty and people feel trapped on benefits that don't pay for very much. Rents are sky high and the buildings are cold and very old, but seem to be very expensive, causing overcrowding, which has worse effects on people's mental health. Similarly, low-skilled, low-paying jobs that do not cover basic cost of living or the high cost of living is entrapping families with many unable to afford rent and bills, feed their families, heat their homes, or give their children opportunity like sports or school trips. Having little money not only impacts on opportunities to participate in society, even having a coffee in a cafe or using transport or attending courses, but also inhibited access to primary health care, secondary and specialist health services. And there was a lot of comment in the summary to this government inquiry about a lack of employment or underemployment, which it says was often a significant driver of poverty and social dislocation. Boredom was seen as having a significant impact on whānau's well-being and a driver of addictive behaviour. Whānau clearly expressed the need for positive and valued activities. Ideally, this was seen as finding paid employment. Those in regional or rural locations or with high needs and multiple disadvantages noted that unemployment had significant impacts on both their own well-being and that of their communities. Lack of employment opportunities was contributing to boredom, drug use and selling, addictions, despair, depression, suicide and poverty. The cycle and interplay between mental health or addictions challenges and employment was often discussed, whereby mental health challenges made it difficult to obtain or maintain employment, and consequently losing employment or being unemployed further exacerbated one's poor mental health. And discrimination comes up in these submissions to the inquiry on mental health and addictions. It says discrimination was also felt by those with mental health challenges seeking help in other government sectors, as submitters with lived experience noted. And I quote, "I've been waiting over 2 years for a house from Housing New Zealand, but still nothing. The street is my home. I rang a motel for some temporary accommodation, but they told me they don't take mental health patients." One submitter from a professional organisation quoted research that said, "A recent report from the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development indicates that Aotearoa New Zealand has the second highest rate of bullying in the entire OECD. Bullying is also an identified risk factor for mental health difficulties, including suicide. This is of significant concern given Aotearoa New Zealand also has some of the highest rates of suicide in young people. Bullying, including cyberbullying, was largely identified in submissions as contributing to mental health challenges, as well as contributing to low self-esteem, suicidality, social isolation, and stress. Bullying now is worse than ever before, and nothing ever gets done about it. The epidemic of bullying online, in school and workplaces, by parents and domestically is intertwined with our mental illness. School bullying can have serious impacts on children and young people's mental health and well-being. Why are we not jumping up and down in schoolyards and stopping every example of school bullying?" Well, bullying is actually one of the things that I'd like to talk to somebody, a guest, an expert, a professional on bullying in New Zealand. It seems to be almost an epidemic. It seems to crop up in the workplace, in schools, online, just about everywhere. And I wonder why we, as New Zealanders, are so quick to bully our colleagues. Have you got a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say I got bullied right through school. In fact, it even started off at primary, but it got worse as I got into college until the later years in college when most of them were younger than me rather than older. And I think, well, I always thought it would be better nowadays, but apparently it's worse because people with cell phones and all sorts of technology can be harassed any time they want. So that's where I think technology in some respects is working against us.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that, Declan. Yeah. Well, shall we take another music break and then we'll come back for some community notices?
Indeed. Hey, I struck one off here for you. Well, you actually picked it anyway, so I must be honest there. Nick Gilder goes back to the period of 78 to 79. I know I've got lots of old CDs in it and that sort of thing, but anyway. This one's called Hot Child in the City. I thought on a day like today, it's probably rather appropriate. You always take it from us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday right here on 104.6 Planet FM from 12:30 through to 1:30.
Community Notice Board.
Well, there's a festival being planned, Festival of Madness being planned in Canterbury between March the 30 and April the 6th. It's inviting people to get involved. Mad Pride is going to be there. There are a number of confirmed events, and this is called Divergence. So you can check out Divergence online. I haven't got an exact online address, but I would suggest just put in Divergence to 2019, a festival of madness, and everything is going to come up. There's already some confirmed events. You can ask online anything about this Mad Pride Festival of Madness event. So that's March the 30th to April the 6th, Mad Wisdom in Canterbury.
Support Bravehearts. Met them on not so long ago. And they have a meeting coming up in Mount Maunganui, Wednesday the 30th of January at 7 p.m. And that is She's also got one coming up on the 12th of February on a Tuesday as well in Tauranga, and there's one in West Auckland on the 14th of February. So just be a reminder, if you do want to watch up here, you
go to Braveheart New Zealand online and probably some more details.
Yeah, here we go. Further details, free phone 0508 272 834, or the website is bravehearts.nz, or you can go to the Facebook page.
And by coincidence, of course, Bravehearts is about those people who are supporting a family member or loved one, whānau, with an addiction. We've got a notice here about Eclipse Mental Health Services offering support for those people who are caring. Well, this is an education and support group, Eclipse Caring for Carers. So this is essentially about the carers looking out for and after people with experience of mental health distress. So this Eclipse Mental Health Services Caring for Carers Education and Support Group is going to be on Monday mornings from 10:30 to 12 p.m. It's going to be at the Whangaparoa Community Hub. It starts on the 18th of February and runs through to the 8th of April. So that's every Monday morning, 10:30 to 12. The Whangaparoa Community Hub is at Shop 8, 707 Whangaparoa Road, Whangaparoa. If you would like further information, you can get in touch with Marina. That's marina.young@equip.net.nz, or call her on 021 1815 412. So that's the family whānau support and education group being run by Equip Mental Health Services.
And here's a good way where you can use your lived experience to support others experiencing mental distress or addiction. It's peer employment training, and it's being run by Connect Supporting Recovery at 28C Lambie Drive in Manukau. It's Tuesdays and Thursdays, starting off on the 14th of February, and it runs through to the 19th of March. Graduation on the 20th of March from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So anybody living in the county's Manukau area with an interest in working in peer support, get onto that. Rachel Maloney is your contact, 021-625560, or you can email her at Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, dot Maloney, M-A-L-O-N-E-Y, at connectsr, for supporting recovery, .org.nz, and light morning and afternoon teas are provided as well, so...
Yeah. Well, cannabis this year is going to be a very big debate. It was on the project on TV3 last night talking about cannabis legislation. One of the things that I think needs to be addressed in mental health is this question: is cannabis good or bad for mental health? And the evidence says it can go either way. So we've got an article here that we'll bring to you on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, at a later stage. We also hope that we're going to have Karen Black, the author of the article about illegal CCTV use in inpatient units, and her research returns some alarming results. It's an issue which is being sort of messaged on Facebook. So how are we doing, Declan? We seem to have gone very quiet. What's happened to our theme music?
No, I just took that down because I thought you'd finished the community notices, and we are actually on our way out, I think. Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Good timing. You see, I've got you well trained. You need to train me, though, to get here on time.
That's right.
All right. We'll catch you next week.
You got my drill and going at 12:30.
I got you into some preliminary training. I'll be getting myself out of a job soon. We'll catch you next week, guys.
Do you think anybody's supposed to respect?